Welcome to ReCW, your weekly look into the world of extreme from Hardcore TV, episode one, all the way to 401 with every pay-per-view and special in between. And this week is a special week because we're doing the special that's special.
It is a special special.
It's a special special. You got myself, Paul, and I'm joined currently by Jay. And Griff is going to join us in a minute. He'll just sort of just pop in and act like he was here the whole time, but he wasn't.
Yeah, like the ECW triangle match from a few weeks ago. Paul and I will start it off, and then Griff the Sandman will join for no apparent reason after a non-specified amount of time, and then probably just win.
But speaking of winning, we are winning because we are in 1996. We're looking at House Party from January the 5th. It is the Public Enemy's last event in the company at this point. And I'm buzzing. It is a fantastic show. I can't wait to run this down.
So happy New Year.
Yeah, happy. Extreme New Year. We're in 1996. For those who've been following us on social media, obviously been going on quite a bit about this. And again, a little bit of interaction from a couple of other people. Rob Van Dam, Just Incredible, a couple of people.
Sabu,
like say us. Yeah, so a couple of streams. Obviously, anyone's welcome on any time. Have a little chat.
You feel that they might know a little bit about
Extreme Journey.
Championship Wrestling and the journey from episode one all the way to 401 Eastern to Extreme and everything in between. You think that they might be good people to if they're interacting with us on social media, you wonder why more people aren't.
Well, I mean, a fair amount of people do, but you know, more people. But, it's good. Is that the man himself?
I'm here.
Oh, no, sorry. I thought it was Rob Van Dam. Oh, well, no climax.
The whole fucking show.
We've hyped him up for ages to join. And
you've missed the fucking show.
Yeah, so next week we're looking at 1998. It's been a wild ride. Thank you very much. What an episode. God, we covered some grounds.
Mate, how long have we been gone for?
We just went for it quick.
2 years.
We just ran down the titles. Who won what?
Oh, brilliant.
So that's up to speed. Mr. Hughes is back again.
Oh. We will get there.
For a 100th time.
A few of them are back again.
Oof, it's heating up. They're coming back because this is where the party's at. Yeah, like we said, House Party 1996, ECW, January the 5th. The show starts with Joey Styles, who is confronted by Bill Alfonso, quickly followed by Taz.
Strong, powerful segment.
Great. Well, I mean, the intensity with a Taz segment is really starting to come through, I think.
Yeah. So as Taz is, like, overnight, the baddest fucker on the planet. You suddenly just, in a way that you didn't quite get when he was training with the Steiners and all the rest of it, you just suddenly realize what a bad motherfucker this guy is and how many ways he can just hurt you. He just suddenly has clicked into exactly everything we know he becomes.
I mean, obviously, he gets the nickname the Human Suplex Machine and all that, but he is just comes across like you said, a complete machine. He's the ultimate fighter, before wrestling started using the ultimate fighter. He looks like the guy who, quote unquote, will shoot on you and just bat the crap out of you if you cross him.
Just bad man.
Do you not suffer Kurt Angle's first ever loss?
He did beat the Angle. Angle's turning up this year in ECW, by the way.
Oh, that storyline's going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
He beats some big names, and it's really interesting to see how they position him, because, you know, his first feud, if you will, on this new persona of his, seems to be 911, who is someone they've built for so long as this absolutely unstoppable force of nature, wrecking ball kind of guy. You know, this giant who just destroys people. And you've got Taz squaring up to him and, you know, even backing him down at points. And automatically, just by doing that, you've made Taz so much stronger because of how you've built 911. It's brilliant.
This is it. You've got Taz becoming this machine. And in doing so, he's humanizing 911, who is a sort of awesome force.
But they know 911 can't wrestle, hence...
He's just going to be a ragdoll.
Hence, the backwards, like they're all screaming, like, let them fight, let them go.
And 911 was trying.
And then there's just no 911 can't wrestle. So even though they're building it up, I don't know what it's ever going to... Well, I do know where it comes as. But, yeah, it was crazy first 20 minutes, this whole, like, pay-per-view. First 20 minutes was just chaotic.
Yeah, so basically, like I said, Bill Alfonso Taz coming out, confronting Joey Styles, leads to 911 coming out, getting a quiet scuffle. The fans are chanting, let them fight. And, yeah, it ends up with the Eliminators coming out.
Yep.
Hitting him with total elimination.
Yep.
Which, still, every week I say it, what a fucking finishing move. Hitting him with that. Then it leads to Rey Mysterio running out.
All the people that's come out from the back to, like, even though this tag team match was happening anyway, they all built it up as, like, of all the people coming out to save him, is the tiny Rey Mysterio.
And I spent half this match not really knowing if it was a match or not.
No, it was very ECW in the way that it just kind of started. It was really weird in the way it started because you had Taz bullying Joey Styles. 911 runs out to make the save. They square up. They're pulled apart. 911 leaves the ring. Taz then bullies Joey Styles again.
Yeah.
911 runs back in. And then that's where the Eliminators run in and start triple teaming him. And it was just this really weird whole kind of how they almost like reset it and started again for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And they just kept 911 down. Every time 911 went to get up, they kind of put him down. Hence, like, he can't wrestle. So it's kind of like Rey Mysterio versus the Eliminators.
It was kind of genius, the story, in the sense that 911 can't wrestle and couldn't really hang with the Eliminators. So the story was taking out the big man to work on the little man. But in a sense, it was like protecting the big man because they knew he couldn't do anything, but Rey could do some great stuff with these guys.
Yeah, and it took three bad people to knock him down and take him out.
Yeah, so again, like we said before, like, you know, great work from sort of Heyman, like protecting sort of weaknesses of this guy.
And at one point, I thought we were going to get the first 619 because Saturn's like arms over the rope. But yeah, that never happened.
Didn't live there.
I wasn't a massive fan of the finish.
I was. That was the chicken game, right?
Yeah.
It's just why would the Eliminators get in each other's shoulders and then just wait for Mysterio? Because Mysterio is on top of 911's shoulders. It was just. It wasn't as instant, and it just seemed like I'm just going to hang on the shoulders while you do what you do on me.
Yeah.
And then,
it's one of those ones, like, in modern day, it would work really well in kind of, like, GIF format because you cut out the awkwardly trying to balance on shoulders and you just literally just see him leaping off and hit a Hurricane Rana.
And crazy enough, 911 struggled to hold Mysterio up more than...
He should do.
What's his name? Holding Saturn up.
I know, Cronus.
Yeah.
Cronus.
It's a very weird finish. I mean, so the visual of 911 and Rey Mysterio together are fantastic. It reminds me a little bit of Mike and Sully from Monsters, Inc. This weird thing where they wanted to have the Eliminators this dominant force. but didn't want 9-1-1 and Ray to lose.
Yeah.
So you end up with this weird, absolutely out of just out of the flow of the match. It felt so, it felt almost as if you'd skipped to another match, in the sense that suddenly you've got the moment that they do that, and then they just pin and then get on with it again.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically, I feel like obviously the way it sort of changes with people leaving and that, but it's one of them where I wouldn't be surprised if they had sort of stayed around, if they'd got a little title run or something.
Well, I think this is 9-1-1's last ever appearance, if I read rightly.
Oh, really? So he's...
Is it?
I think this is 9-1-1 goes.
So I didn't think he was going yet.
This is he doesn't have many matches. This is definitely his last match, but whether he appears and chokeslams anyone, there's already like rummages where he's fallen out with Paul Heyman at the back.
Yeah, so I mean, him and Taz get into trouble because he doesn't job to Taz in the way that they want him to.
I read this is it for him.
Maybe he's went to Tombstone. I suppose Tombstone was 95, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's coming up soon. When I remember we watched it.
The 1996 house party event, 9-1-1 team with Rey Mysterio to defeat the Eliminators in a tag match, which would turn out to be his last match in ECW. He got involved in a brawl with Taz after the match, and the feud evolved between the two. It was scrapped as he left the promotion by early 96 after falling out with Heyman over the former's treatment of the ring crew.
So we may see him, but there's no more in ring. I don't know.
That sounds like he's done.
So Big Al. He returned to WCW as Big Al and feuded with Tank Abbott in early 2000.
No, did not portray the Big Al who feuded with Tank Abbott in WCW in early 2000.
Okay. So he's a different Big Al, but not that Big Al.
No. There's just a lot of Owls that are quite large.
Oh, that's disappointment everywhere.
He does come back in 98 to ECW.
Yeah, I know. He gets, I suppose we get there.
We'll get there.
I won't go on about. But yeah, no, so that was interesting. And Ray and I pick up the win. After the match, the Pitbulls come out with Francine. They start brawling with the Eliminators. And the Eliminators hit a crazy total elimination of Francine.
That looked nasty. She did take
she
a bump.
Took that like an absolute champ.
I feel like it's one of those finishes you can't really prepare for, though, because you are getting like someone swept and you are sort of getting like smacked in the face with the... It feels like...
And landed on.
Yeah, it feels slightly more legit, you know, because you are just getting absolutely steamrolled.
Yeah.
It just looks completely out of control. It's fantastic. So she gets hit with that. That was insane. We then get Axel Rotten versus a little young whippersnapper known as Rob Van Dam, making his debut in ECW.
And he does look young.
He does look young. Joey Styles run down some of the past history about him obviously being in Japan, WCW, and everything else he'd done previously. Got a bit of a backstory on Rob Van Dam. Axel Rotten did the usual sort of mimicking sort of the karate poses and all the sort of the cool guy stuff that sort of like, oh, I'm going to do this as well. I'm going to do a kick as well. But considering he was very young and obviously not full on into the character, I was impressed with Rob Van Dam here.
Yeah, even the crowd were even like telling Axel Rotten to like knock him out.
Yeah.
And obviously we know how massive he becomes for ECW. Yeah, it was great. Obviously, a bit weird seeing him doing the frog splash without the frog. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it was. So what I thought was interesting was how much of his offense and his signature moves were in this match and stay with him all the way through. So if you think about Ray, for instance, a lot of his moves that he does today are not in his repertoire in 1996 ECW. I mean, you referenced the 619, but a lot of the moves he does weren't the same.
No.
And with all of this, you know, Taz, for instance, Taz had to change his style as he went into WWE and various other things. So whilst there were points that might have been the same, he didn't have that just, you know, out and out, you know, big chunks that were exactly the same. Whereas with Rob Van Dam, you had, you know, the splash, albeit not the frog splash. You had the shoulder barges into the corner, then the backflip and then the run in. You had some of the somersaults. You had some of the kicks.
The split kind of, how would you call it?
The finisher, the split-legged moonsault. Yeah, this is it. So it's just not the same. It is the same. It's incredible that 1996 and we're watching him 2019, and you can have huge chunks of the match that are pretty much the same, and he's doing exactly the same stuff. I just thought it was really interesting how evolved his mood set was at that point.
Yeah. Still going. And he wrestled in Bound for Glory the other night. Oh. I think Rob Van Dam, Rhino, Tommy Dreamer and Sabu were all there. Mental. Yeah.
Wonder what they've got in common.
Interesting. So Rob Van Dam picked up a win on a debut. Like I said, impressive. I'm looking forward to watching his character evolve. When does he sort of become the whole effing show, as it were? So, be good to grow and watch what happens with him.
Definitely.
Next up, we got a TV title match: 2 Cold Scorpio, No Gold versus Mikey Whipwreck for the ECW Tag TV title. Oh,
no, this is all right.
Went on a bit, same sort of match, decent. Scorpio again.
Bored of it.
Amazing ability, but yeah, the match didn't spark for me.
And we touched on this a couple of weeks ago, I think. I struggle now with this continual booking of Whipwreck as this no-hoper, you know, oh, he's pulled off an upset and no one expects him to. Oh, my gosh, he's fighting back. He's now won every championship there is in that company.
He's nearly a two-time triple champion.
Yeah, exactly. So he's won the TV champion twice. He's won the tag team championship twice. He's won the heavyweight championship once. He's beaten the Sandman. He's beaten Steve Austin and Rey Mysterio as well. You know, he's got quite the pedigree now. You know, he's already bordering on a Hall of Fame career at this point. So this whole kind of, who'd have thunk it? Little Mikey Whipwreck's managed to score a win. No. And just, again, you know, you can see this, and they didn't quite do it the same this time. But this whole kind of, you know, the cocky heel continues to beat him down. And 1, 2, oh, he pulls him up. And he continues to beat him down. 1, 2, and he pulls. And I'm bored of seeing that story with this guy now.
But why would he not be desperate to win the belt? I don't get why he wouldn't just pin and then go, especially with Woman being the manager. It doesn't create that picture. With Woman being the manager wanting all the gold.
Why would you be taking him for granted and you know, doing these silly things when not long ago, about a month ago, in fact, less than a month ago, he was the world heavyweight champion. Something that you have never been able to achieve. Yeah. You don't take him. He's a former heavyweight champion. This whole kind of, you know, oh, and he's taking him for granted. Even if you take out the fact that he beat you a week ago, he's the former heavyweight champion.
The current tag team champion and the current TV
nothing, champion. But even if your logic was, he's the current TV champion, he's the current tag champ because he beat me on a fluke. Cool. He's also beaten everyone else on a fluke. At which point, that's got to stop being a fluke.
Yeah, he's just got to be robust.
Yeah, and you know he's, you know, you get to the point, and I know that they do, but you get to the point that it's you know, it's not the size of the dog in the fight; it's the size of the fight in the dog, and that kind cliche kind of stuff.
Yeah, his character should be evolving. What he lacks in ability, he makes up in
heart and yeah. And he doesn't give up, and
that it should be the frustration that Scorpio should be beating the crap out of him and he kicks out of everything. Yeah.
That should be the story.
Yeah.
And eventually gets so annoyed that he makes a mistake and Mikey beats him.
Yeah.
That would work sort of better, the fact that this kid just don't get put away. But Scorpio did put him away with help from Raven, who's got no interest in having him in the Nest. I don't know if it's officially called the Nest yet. But
I think they referenced it as the Nest, yeah.
Yeah, he's got no interest in having him. So he came out, attacked him, and Scorpio picked up the win and got his TV title back.
Yeah, so they tease that he's going to hit Scorpio, and then he doesn't.
Hmm. Load up the boot. Next, we have Hack Myers Shah versus the Human Suplex Machine, Taz with Bill Alfonso. I was still loving this version of Taz's music. From what we had beginning days of the Eastern and the whole lack of care about the music, I will sort of say, I know it's not authentic, but from this point, WWE Network seem to at least be dubbing
half decent
music. So even like Sabu, he wasn't using like sort of the Haka Blues at this point, but the fact that they know they can use that and they can overdub with that, tremendous. Do you know what I mean? So little details like that, I'm a big fan of, because it just makes it so much easier to watch.
Yeah, I mean, some of it. So the Sabu stuff picks out. The Highway to Hell ripoff, I think, is quite good.
Yeah.
The Taz one, I quite like. However, some of them are still fucking awful. And the Hack Raven. Myers one. The Raven one's crap. Awful. The Public Enemy is awful. Their music's bad as well. And but the Hack Myers one, you know, it was the comment I've first written about this is just what an awful piece of music.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why I didn't give Raven just his WWE music.
No, and same with Taz, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, they're both sort of good theme songs. It's there and it's done. But yeah, I was impressed that Hack Myers actually got some offense in here. I thought he was going to get absolutely steamrolled by Taz.
But overall, yeah, I thought this was going to be a squash match.
I did. I thought it was going to be walking suplex, 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 Taz mission, you know, fuck you, Sabu, and gone.
Some of the suplexes did look a bit nasty.
he's absolutely amazing.
And Alfonso was great, just screaming at ringside.
That's all he has to do, isn't it?
It's just, yeah. But obviously, Paul Hack Myers was great in the Sabu match a few weeks ago as well. But yeah, I think he's tight. I don't know how long he sticks around for. Is he here all the time with us?
Who, Hack?
Yeah.
On off. He plays a role, I'd say, definitely to 97, 98. But he's never a standout. He's sort of always, you know, he's around. He gets referenced.
But I think we've seen his most high profile.
Yeah, the Shah thing's definitely the highlight of his career, but other people overtake him pretty quickly.
Okay.
But he's always around.
Well, so that, he kind of even loses that, doesn't he? So, Balls Mahoney, when he comes in, they kind of adapt it for Balls. So when Balls is hitting someone, it's Balls, Balls, Balls. And when someone's hitting Balls, it's nuts, nuts, nuts. So even that bit kind of lives on beyond him.
Oh, poor Hack. So Taz eventually does pick up the wins.
Far better match for me than we saw with Sabu and Hack Myers, because it wasn't competitive. It's closer to the match that I thought they should have. I thought the Sabu and Hack Myers match went on far too long. It was too 50-50. You know, I know that Taz didn't just steamroller him, but you were in no doubt who was in control of that match and who won that match.
Yeah, 100%. After the match, Taz talks about his path of rage and tells everyone to fuck off.
So I thought it was just... the deep stuff now. We're in the deep end of this now. We're not far from the shallows. This is deep ECW now.
It just feels quite refreshing just hearing someone just swear, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because the world's almost gone full circle where you can be shocked again by it.
Totally. So that's good. Next we have Bubba Ray Dudley with Sign Guy Dudley, Chubby Dudley, Dances with Dudley, and Big Dick Dudley versus Jimmy Del Rey with Mr. Hughes.
Yeah, so before we get on to the what the fuck with Jimmy Del Rey and Mr. Hughes, I'm not sure about the Dudley naming.
Why?
Because it's confusing me.
That's your
idea, isn't it? So, D.W. Dudley, I see and I understand.
Yeah.
Signed Guy Dudley, I see and I understand. Love the fact that, you know, you can see the sign feud going on.
If we're going down the road to Big Dick Dudley here, you just need to stop, all right?
What?
Trying to get that Blue Chew sponsorship again, aren't you?
So you've got JRD. But so you've got like Chubby Dudley,
yeah,
who doesn't look that big. I mean, he isn't, you know, on My 600-Pound Life or something. He's not.
Yeah, but that would be clinically obese Dudley.
But he's eating pizza.
Yeah, he's just chubby.
And then you've got Big Dick Dudley, who's the same size as Bubba Ray.
Yeah, but.
So he's not actually that big. So Chubby's not actually that chubby, and Dick's not actually that big. And he's wearing blue. So yeah, I don't understand.
Do you know how old Big Dick Dudley is in this?
73 years old.
How old do you reckon he is?
27.
73 years old.
Yeah, he's 27.
Oh, really?
And it's like, wow, you have not aged well.
And apparently he's got an absolute massive heart.
Yeah.
As well.
But I have massive problems. When we get to the match, I have massive problems with this.
We're in the match.
We are in the match. So Jimmy Del Rey is here with Mr. Hughes as his backup because his partner has gone off to have some sunny days.
Oh.
Griff, did you get the reference?
I did.
Go on then.
Bodies on us.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
He's gone off to be zipped.
Slam dunk the funk. He did go off to be zipped, didn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, it can't be long before Candido comes back then.
Sweet. No, it can't be.
Well, we still got it through WrestleMania and all that jazz. But yeah, can't be long. That's crazy.
So, yeah, so the American Gigolo, Jimmy Del Rey's gone for his backup, which is quite obviously Mr. Hughes.
Hughesy. Obviously, we'll talk about the
another payday.
Anyway, what annoyed you about this match, Griff?
Oh, because you've got loads of the Dudleys.
Yeah.
And Mr. Hughes kind of interferes at some point, and Big Dick Dudley doesn't hit him whatsoever. And then, obviously, when we come to what happens, Big Dick Dudley also does nothing. I just, they're supposed to be like a family and load of these people, and he's supposed to be the big, massive enforcer. But he brings nothing to the table but grunt.
To be fair, isn't his knee still fucked?
Then stay injured. He can't even hit people with cane. Like, he sees, obviously, the main talk of this match, we might as well just come down to it. I'll wait for you to announce it and then we'll discuss it more.
That's all right. We'll just obviously run down the end. So he won, then we'll get into the good stuff. And why it was so scary.
The end is basically like Bubba Ray DDT finish, if I remember.
Yeah.
Pins. And then there's loads of like freeze kind of stuff where I don't know what happened in between. This match seemed to like not be in its entirety. Because then all of a sudden they're out the ring, and then all of a sudden Mr. Hughes and that are back inside the ring, and basically they're like, "You can't talk properly. I know someone who can talk you better English." ECW got to learn how to like, I don't know, show the entrance way because they're still showing the ring, and everyone's going crazy, and it's like we're supposed to be in on it, and until Joey Styles say it's the franchise, like. And the franchise still doesn't come onto screen for like another 10 seconds. They usually, I don't know, they need to get that whole like, oh shit, it's him.
I don't know why you bring Mr. Hughes back. I don't know why you get Mr. Hughes to cut a promo. I don't know why you get Mr. Hughes to cut a promo about people not speaking English good.
I think what scared me the most about this is obviously when Shane Douglas hit the side of the ring, he started doing the triple threat sign.
Yeah.
And it kind of sat the fault, Jimmy Del Rey, Mr. Hughes and Shane Douglas, the triple threat. They've arrived.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've built a triple threat up a lot.
Oh,
about how powerful and important it is. And, you know, it's fair to say that while the talent was on show with the Crippler, the Shooter, and the Franchise...
Even though they were never in the ring at the same fucking time.
They were never in the ring at the same time. They were in no shape, way, shape or form, apart from one promo they cut together. They were never actually together in any format. So at the moment, I do feel like we are drastically overselling the triple threat based upon what they become. And what kind of surprised me slightly...
It's how much you wanted this group.
Is when I realised that actually it's not even the next incarnation of the triple threat. It's the final incarnation of the triple threat.
Yeah. We've still got prime time to go, yeah, haven't we?
Yeah.
But yeah, no.
So I wouldn't have surprised me.
And I was so worried that this old Hughesy or Del Rey were just going to throw up the old triple threat sign. But instead, Del Rey just kept pointing to Shane Douglas, really excited to see him. And Shane Douglas says, the best teacher ever. And I'm like, are you taking the piss out of yourself? Or like,
I found it very strange that he embraced that. Like, why would you even bring that up? You'd just be like, I've been away for a little bit, but not...
No, I thought he would have been the other way. He's like, I'm not here to like teach you English, you know. It sucks being a teacher kind of thing.
Here on the Franchise, like...
Yeah.
I'm something.
Like, fuck you. Kind of his normal kind
Yeah. It almost felt like he was trying to port in the Dean gimmick rather than just kind of like
I'll prove I can get it over kind of thing. So yeah, he's back. We all rejoice.
And then he slaps Bubba Ray Dudley and just no one does anything about it.
Casting session.
No, for a family and backup, the Dudleys are fucking awful. I mean, even Big Dick Dudley just kind of looks at him and like, well, you know, you did stutter.
Exactly. I'm like, what is the point of him?
Future XPW World Heavyweight Champion, I have, you know.
Good for him.
Speaking of what's the point?
We have a mid-show segment. Joey Styles with Stevie Richards. And the Blue Meanie says he's no longer dancing Stevie Richards. He's now Studly Stevie Richards. And as this sort of falls as a raven, and Jay is our resident raven expert. Jay, take this segment away.
So he explains that for 4 weeks now, Raven had gone to a concert and basically has been on a four-week bender where he's not been around. Not there at the moment, four-week bender where he's not been around. Now, ignore the fact that we've seen him already tonight, because apparently we haven't, because he's not there. He's on his four-week bender. And as such, and bearing in mind, Studly Stevie Richards is enjoying his you know, Studly out-and-out sassy nature, and we all love a bit of sassy. So, you know, we know that that's the case. After being the ladies' man that he was and getting a snog from Missy Hyatt last week or a couple of weeks ago at Holiday Hell, he's declared that he is Studly and therefore he's going to look after Raven's girl because Beulah isn't getting any attention from Raven because Raven's just been drunk for 4 weeks. So he's now going to look after Beulah. Beulah doesn't want to be touched. Stevie continues on and Beulah declares that the reason she doesn't want to be touched is because she's pregnant.
Someone's been in Beulah's box.
Oh my God, did you rehearse that?
He's got no notes.
That's the reason why you've been saying about how amazing a show this is, because you had that one line prepped and ready.
He's got an A4 piece of paper with just that one joke underneath notes on. He's ready.
No, it's got a little post-it note.
Perfect. That's all you need, my man. Make it as a T-shirt.
That's what you do in the counts.
I've been in Bueller's box.
Yeah.
So Raven, who's been drunk for 4 weeks and is rarely seen, runs out. He's changed into his wrestling gear. And he gets in Stevie's face. Oh, no. So he gets in Bueller's face. Bueller tells Raven that he's not the dad. So Raven goes after Stevie.
Stirred.
Bueller tells Raven that Stevie's not the dad either. At which point, Blue Meanie steps up. He doesn't, but he should have done. And he declares that the baby is Tommy Dreamer's.
It's Tommy's.
The crowd go wild and Tommy runs out and clears everyone off. We have the iconic moment of use my sign, Tommy. And then after he smashes him with this sign, he rips it to reveal the stop sign underneath, which is a brilliant spot. But after you've seen them hit each other with literally everything in the audience every single week, a stop sign feels a little bit
light. The guard is down, wasn't it? You prepared yourself a bit of cardboard. You didn't sort of get yourself in the zone to get hit with something hard.
Thought the biggest risk you had was a paper cut.
I felt this was a highly motivated Tommy Dreamer hitting the ring here.
I loved this whole segment. It was really good.
I thought it was quite edgy segment. I thought it was well done. I like the fact that Raven's first instinct was it had to be Dudley Stevie Richards, showing sort of a little sort of issues there. I love that Tommy sort of came out not in full wrestling gear and just went hell for leather. I liked it. I thought it was decent.
It was good. Any more on that?
No. Yeah. So I've seen a little bit of what comes next, and yeah, we'll talk about that.
Oh, next we have an ECW heavyweight title match as Sandman with Woman takes on Conan.
They don't really like having the world title as the main event, do they? I get this pay per view because it's goodbye to the Public Enemy,
but generally,
very rarely do we get the world title
as the main event. Final match. Yeah, totally.
Not semi-main. Not even semi-main.
No, not even co-main. Semi-main, Jesus. Semi. That's because I was talking about Bueller's box.
See, now, if you had Bluetooth, it wouldn't be a semi. Anyway.
Don't talk.
The first chewable with the same... Oh, no. We don't get paid for that.
So basically, this match sort of did nothing for me to start off with. I kind of sat there and thought, do I really want to watch Sandman versus Conan? It's such a weird match, sort of stylistically. And by the end of the match, I was just like, this match is really brutal and was sort of kind of hard
insane
to watch.
Insane.
Yeah, so that's the reason. That's the story they were trying to tell. So it starts off with Conan wrestling Sandman and Sandman trying to fight Conan. So Conan is doing leg grapevines and you know, various submission moves and you know, wrestling him, and then gets drawn into just this brutal, bloody fight. And that, you know, trying to be the wrestler and just getting drawn more and more into how extreme does he have to get to try and beat Sandman, and descending to his level where actually the Sandman is always going to beat you because he's the experienced one at all of this. So it was quite an interesting story they were telling about that moving through. And the turning point was, you know, Conan kind of got absolutely bloodied, and that made him kind of grab and embrace his inner violence for it.
Say he turned into some sort of barbarian.
That was good. That was good. I'll give you that one. That was good. Yeah.
Are you?
So that was kind of the story of the match.
It was good. So basically, they're exchanging Kane shots at the end, which was just, like I said, just absolutely savage.
Who passed Conan the cane?
So that one was in the crowd.
They didn't actually explain it. No,
so there was...
Oh, it was just someone from the crowd, was it?
Yeah, so someone in the crowd had brought a cane.
It's a godsend, really.
Yeah, I mean, so this crowd
like
is,
bully,
is...
What he was wearing, it looked like the bully.
I don't think it was.
It wasn't Hitman.
I think it was just a guy in a hockey jersey.
Okay. He has to turn up as a fan now, get his own tickets.
Yeah.
Hello.
And bring his own Singapore cane.
Perfect. Perfect. Sandman ends up getting the win and retaining that world title.
Just.
Sandman face a heel, what would you say?
Oh. Heel.
Face.
It's weird, isn't it?
Depends who he's fighting.
Yeah, I think he's one of those kind of so-called...
What a great... Yeah, I think he's obviously transitioning for his next sort of main feud. So I think he's becoming a bit more face, but yeah. Next, we've got Studley Stevie Richards with that blue meanie again versus the homicidal, genocidal, suicidal Sabu.
And he did stack it going to the ring, right? He just run around and completely stacked it.
Yeah,
I thought it was a really good match.
I thought it was a good match. I thought Sabu looked well up for it.
Yeah,
throwing himself around like only he can. But Stevie kind of held his own a lot more than I thought he would, hitting nice sort of powerbomb spots and stuff like that. But yeah, I liked it.
It was good.
Not bad at all. Sabu picking up the victory. Is there any major spots you want to point out from it? Are you just generally happy that it was just there and it was nice?
It was just a Sabu match.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, so I love the yellow trunks that he was wearing, the yellow trunks he was wearing in this. They're quite an iconic Sabu look. But I've got to say the match is kind of meh. He's not kind of convincing me with it. So it'll be interesting to see how he continues to play through.
Mm. Yeah, totally. Obviously, Sabu picks up the win and moving on to the main event. And the reason this is your main event is because it's a farewell match to the Public Enemy who are on their way to WCW. Next week, we're probably going to find a few bits of Public Enemy WCW to have a little look ski, but we'll get to that. As Public Enemy come out, they grab the mic, say, "You can take us out of ECW, but you can't take ECW out of us." And the crowd have a tremendous chant of, "You'll be back."
I thought this is pretty...
It's incredible because it's sold as this whole kind of, you know, "We want you back." Whereas actually, and I don't know whether this is the benefit of the hindsight or everything, it is, you're going to fuck up over there and you'll come back.
Yeah, quite funny. Griffiths, these were your boys, and this was the last time. Any standout bits from this match? Because I'm happy just to say they're gone.
It's all bittersweet, but unfortunately, it's not a lot we haven't seen already.
Yeah.
Wild. Most of the spots are kind of... I'm surprised they picked up the win, but I'm guessing as it was other... Whenever people leave an organisation, they very rarely have a pay-per-view purely for that. So usually when you're leaving, you go out on a loss. But A, they lost the last match to the... Gangsters, and I guess as this was called
yeah, just I'm kind of more surprised they won this one the same way I was surprised they lost the last one, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell sense of gratitude from ECW here, knowing that Public Enemy have played their part and were a massive chapter in the history of the company.
And it just feels like if they stayed, what could have been even more, really. But I suppose I say that the matches do, they are all a little bit samey. And I suppose it is a kind of a bit of time to move on.
Well, I think things like the tag division and everything else, I do think it was the perfect time for them to move on. They'd wrestled everyone. They couldn't really get the belts back because it'd been done sort of low.
Yeah.
It was the perfect...
I think you're at the point where you have to either move them on or break them up.
Exactly.
And I don't think you can hide them as singles.
And it's surprising it didn't work out with WWE or WCW, really.
WCW, they had a 4-day title reign, I think.
And then they had a dark match, I think, with WWE before Raw.
They were on actually Sunday Night Heat, I think it was.
Or was it?
Yeah, there's the infamous match with them against the Acolytes.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've checked your Instagram, but, you know, @_sportsreader on Instagram, pop up a question of your favourite Public Enemy memory. And someone being an asshole may have said that their favourite Public Enemy memory was them versus the Acolytes.
And someone says their favourite Public Enemy match was Jeff Hardy versus CM Punk.
I mean, it's up there.
I mean, I shared it, you know.
Public Enemy number one.
Yeah, fuck it, get it all out there. Who cares?
And if that was you and you're listening to us and that was what you put, you know, give us a voice note and I encourage explaining why you chose that as your moment and we will share it on next week's episode.
The mad days of violence.
We might not. Might just completely ignore you.
Yeah.
But we also did have a legit one saying that their favourite was... Where are we at? Let me find it. The matches with the Gangsters and the Bruise Brothers.
Oh, this 26.
Yeah. Yeah, so thinking back to the Bruise Brothers time, that was some crazy times, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I think they've pretty much
been on every kind of... Very rarely has been an episode without a promo or anything in the last year or so. They have.
I'm looking forward to not having them be on my Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think that the Bruise Brothers obviously put them, I'd say, on the map as an early wild feud. And I think Gangsters definitely... sort of rejuvenated them when they sort of appeared. You're like, oh, wow.
I think the Bad Company matches were good, but overladen with ridiculous gimmicks. You know, the body count match, for instance, made just no sense at all.
Still never seen that. What's that? Was that one where if you lose, your partner gets killed or something?
So apparently it doesn't get shown a lot and it's hard to track down because it was just horrendous. None of the timings worked. And then obviously, no one dies. So it's like this really odd stip that obviously can't be lived up to in any way, shape or form. I think they had a base brawl match with Bad Company as well. The stuff they did with that was good.
Do they have like a base brawl match just that wasn't advertised at all? And then the next night was just a real standard boring match, which they heavily pushed.
Yeah, I want to say it was Axel Rotten and someone.
I can't believe it's announced, but it's like mental. Like, oh, it's that everyone's going to die a match on Friday night. Oh, and Saturday, we need to talk about this match. It's them against Marty Jannetty or whatever.
I mean, we had it again recently with the Ultimate Jeopardy match, where everyone had something like super dangerous on the line. That's never mentioned. And I believe that Stevie Richards lost, which meant he had to face the Pitbulls and Tommy Dreamer and a different tag team for 5 minutes or something. And basically Raven and the gang beat them all up and chained them to the ring so that they can get to in 5 minutes.
Boom. But we then got a Public Enemy sort of montage of all moments, and it was beautiful and everyone cried. Really good show. Best probably overall event, that my opinion, that we've seen as of yet. I thought it
was great. Much better than the last one.
Yeah, I thought as one set of stars leave in the Public Enemy, we have people return, as in Shane Douglas, and we also have new stars born, as in Rob Van Dam has arrived. So it's a tremendous sort of transitional period again for sort of the revolving door that is ECW. And
the ability for ECW at this point just to introduce and introduce and introduce star after star after star. You know, this one show, we've got RVD's first match. You've got Mikey Whipwreck, who, as we've said, goes on, you know, is a legend. You've got Taz, who's a legend. You've got Francine, who's a legend. You've got Saturn and Cronus, who are legendary in what they do. You've got franchise comeback. You've got Raven and Tommy and Beulah and Stevie. You've got Sandman in there. You've got New Jack in there. Sabu in there. You know, this is kind of your dream ECW roster starting to come through now. So it's just amazing how, you know, you, in a show that's sending off the Public Enemy, and you've got Sabu, who's only just come back, and Franchise, who comes straight back in, and RVD debut.
Well, yeah, it's just
crazy.
It's just perfect. Mm. And that is the end of my part. So thank you very much. Like and subscribe. Make sure you find us on Instagram and Twitter @_SportsArena. We are very active and we're talking more and more and more ECW as the days go by, because it's good. Also go to zazzle.co.uk or .com. You can simply search Sports Arena, find a whole bunch of t-shirts. Now the internet is working again in my household. I shall spend some time and get some of the new designs up there, like the ECW Sports Arena shirt and the Innovator of Silence shirt that we've been working on. So it's going to be good. I'm Paul. I'm disappearing and they do what they do. See you next time.
So it is that time of the show where I challenge Griff to do a spoken word performance of a song or a promo or something that has inspired me and taken my imagination from what we've just watched. I had a few thoughts about this. You know, I thought, you know, Hot Stepper again, because, you know, Public Enemy's last show and various other things. But I was moved by the beauty of life and the beauty of creating life, you know, the magical love story we are seeing with Beulah and Tommy and the baby. So I was thinking about songs about babies and pregnancy and childbirth, and one of the ones that came up in my search was from the band Creed, who obviously have wrestling pedigree with the Desire videos from WWE. So to talk to us about how Tommy Dreamer is feeling when he's hearing from the back that he is the father of Beulah's baby, here is Griff with Creed's With Arms Wide Open.
Well, I just heard the news today. It seems my life is going to change. I close my eyes, begin to pray, then tears of joy stream down my face. With arms wide open, under the sunlight, welcome to this place. I'll show you everything. With arms wide open, with arms wide open. Well, I don't know if I'm ready to be the man I have to be.
Yeah, man, Tommy.
I'll take a breath. I take her by my side. We stand in awe. We've created life. with arms wide open, under the spotlight, sunlight. Uh-huh. Welcome to this place. I'll show you everything. With arms wide open, now everything has changed. I'll show you love. I'll show you everything. With arms wide open, with arms wide open, I'll show you everything. Oh yeah, with arms wide open, wide open. I just want to say, if I had just one wish, only one demand, I hope he's not like me. I hope he understands that he can take this life and hold it by the hand, and he can greet the world with arms wide open.
Because it's wide open. Because it's like goodbye, Tommy's Public Post.
Enemy. Goodbye, Public Enemy.
They'll be back. They'll be back. Because they're shit.
Fuck me, that's a long song, isn't it?
Bye.